A few summers ago, my son Seth, when he was younger, accompanied me to Funtown for the day, and we took in a lot of the rides, the water slides, and he had never been on a roller coaster before. He was young enough that he had not had that experience. Well, this was the time he determined he was ready. So we started with the Wild Mouse, which is great for all ages. Probably many of you have ridden that before. It's just a small roller coaster, reaches about 25 miles per hour. It's about a 45-foot drop. So we tried that first, and you know, every drop, every corner, he was screaming. And I didn't know if it was in joy or if it was in fear, but he made it through. And he decided after that, because he survived that, it was time to try Excalibur, which is 88-foot drop, about 50-plus miles an hour, the highest roller coaster in Maine, a wooden roller coaster. So I convinced him that the best way to experience Excalibur was in the front. We had to be in the very first cart so that he could see everything, and he agreed. And you should have heard his experience and seeing the look in his eyes and gripping onto the rail, making it through that ride. I wondered what he would think about it, but all my fears were alleviated after the ride was over, and you know exactly what he said. Can we do it again? So he had this great experience that he could take home and share with his mom once we were back at home. You know, exciting moments are meant to be shared. Courageous acts, they're meant to be praised. Amazing events, great feats, surprising miracles, they're all meant to be announced. Good news is meant to be reported. Last week, those of you who are here or online listened to Greg's message, as I did. It was a great reminder that we don't serve Jesus in the tomb. We serve Jesus who has come out of the tomb. He is wonderfully alive. He is at the right hand of God. He is able to do anything and everything. He is someone to be praised. His feat, that amazing event, that surprising miracle, that someone would not just offer their lives, but take it back up again. That is what we are to share with all those within arm's reach. We spread that news like the soon coming dandelions that will be on our lawns. We are to just spread it and spread it and spread it. And this morning I want to preach about the importance of not only hearing that testimony, but having that testimony. And there's a great difference between hearing it and having it. And I hope that by the end of this message, I will make that clear. As Christians, we have heard and believe the sacred truth that Christ died for our sins, he was buried, and that he was raised on the third day. Yet as Christians, I think you join me in the longing not just to know that truth, but to experience that truth, to know Christ, and to know him more exceedingly and abundantly every single day of our lives. The first Christians heard and had a testimony of the resurrected Christ. And as 21st century Christians just like them, we can have a living, life-changing testimony. And that's just the simple theme for this message today. We can have a living, life-changing testimony. I want to look at two brief passages this morning. Hopefully you're open to the first one, which is Matthew chapter 28, verses 5 to 10. And in these verses, we're told that a group of women had gone to the garden tomb of Jesus with the intention that they would anoint his body with spices. And when they arrived, they discovered the stone was rolled back, they entered the tomb, and they were met by an angel. And we pick the story up in verse 5. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He is risen just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he is risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." These six verses break down very nicely into two sections. In verses 5-7, the women heard the angel's testimony. They heard about the resurrected Christ. And in verses 8-10, they had their own experience with Christ. So not only did they hear a testimony, they had a testimony. They had a living, life-changing moment with the risen Christ for themselves. Well, these women had the opportunity to witness for themselves that Jesus' body was no longer in the tomb. The angel presented evidence. He said, "Come and look. Come and see where he lay. Consider the grave clothes that are here, but the body is missing." The angel talked about Christ's resurrection just as he talked about Christ's death. There were witnesses to his death, of course. No one would have disputed the fact that he had been hung on a Roman cross, that he had bled, that he had died. Now the angel was saying just as simply, "He's not here. He's alive. Consider the evidence. Now go. Go and tell his disciples." I like how the angel says, "Now I have told you." Really, the implied question is, now what will you do with that? You know, now that you know this news, it's your turn. What will you do with that? The angel shared his testimony. Now it was time for the women to go share theirs. They run anxiously from the tomb. It's like a shot of spiritual adrenaline. It's like that phone call in the middle of the night. You know, you weren't ready for it. It was surprising. It woke you right out of a sound sleep, and you can feel your heart racing and the blood pumping. These women are running from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy. And it says, suddenly, I like that word, suddenly Jesus met them. You see, the truth of the resurrection had been presented. They had heard it, but now they see it for themselves. They have their own experience with the resurrected Christ. They encounter him, and he simply says, "Greetings." What that really means is greetings. It's very simple. It's like an ordinary way to come up to somebody and say good morning. Or the way we would see someone for the first time in the day, we say, "Hi, how are you?" Very simple, just an ordinary, everyday greeting. This is where I think we see Jesus and some of his sense of humor come into play. You know, imagine you show up to all your friends. You were dead, buried, and now you're alive, and you just say, "Hey, good morning." Not like, "Ta-da," not like, "I know, right?" You know, nothing like that. He just simply shows up. "Hi." Which leads me to ask a couple questions. Are you still looking around for Jesus to suddenly show up? You know, you heard that diagnosis. Your health is slipping away, or you're losing a loved one. Did you hear what your boss said about your job security? Are you waiting for Jesus to show up? You have a huge hurt in your life, a big disappointment in your life, and you wonder, does God even care? Is he even listening? God, are you hearing my prayers? Do you know how I feel? And this might go on, and you think, will I ever come out of this? And suddenly, the risen Christ comes in and says, "Hi, I care. I can do anything at any moment. Here I am." We may argue with him sometimes, why does it take so long? I don't know the answers. Why did it take a week for Thomas, but everyone else saw Jesus the week prior? I don't know that there's good answers. I know that Jesus shows up. I think that's the point. He shows up. Maybe not when I want him to, maybe not when you want him to, but he shows up. See, these women heard and had a testimony. Jesus showed up. And they had this combination, you know, of fear and joy, and that's worship. That is worship. They're overwhelmed by what Jesus can do. He was dead. He's alive. We get overwhelmed at times in our lives. We need him to do something. We think he's never going to do it. He finally does it. And we're overwhelmed that he did. And then we're also overjoyed. We have a story to share with others. We have good news. We have our own testimony. We have heard and we have that experience with Jesus for ourselves. Well, the second passage of Scripture I want to direct you to is Luke chapter 24. And this is where we see how the disciples respond to the ladies when they go tell them about what their experience is. So here we have these women. They have heard and they have a testimony, and they are going to speak to Jesus' closest friends who right now are still in the midst of grief and sorrow and despair and hopelessness. And in Luke chapter 24, we see these words in verses 9 through 12. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. So here we see the women were faithful. They shared their testimony. It was full of truth. It was full of the excitement of that meeting with the resurrected Christ. And the response? They did not believe them. Luke records that the women's words seemed to them like nonsense. Nonsense refers to foolish talk, empty tales, like fairy tales. The Hebrew word, Greek word, was also used by doctors in the first century to refer to hallucinations, somebody who is out of their mind, delusional, maybe with a high fever. The disciples think, these women, they've lost it. You know, they're grieving so much, they've concocted this story. I don't know how all of them believe the same story, but this is ridiculous. Jesus is dead. How can they be saying he's alive, and then how can they say that they've seen him? This is the babbling of lunatics. Maybe you've watched those YouTube videos of people who wake up from dental surgery. I get that image here, right? It just the disciples think they are talking craziness. They're making no sense. The disciples simply refused to believe. Why? Well, because this was sorrow like they had never known sorrow before, and they did not yet have their own testimony. They are hearing the testimony, but they have not had their own experience with a resurrected Christ. This is such a picture of what it is like when we come to know Jesus and we think all our closest friends who don't know him are going to be so excited to learn what we have discovered. You ever had this experience? I had this experience just as I was a senior in high school, nearing the end of high school. I knew it was really time. What was I going to do, commit to Jesus or not? And that summer after I graduated, between high school and college, I made the decision that I would follow Jesus. I can remember excitedly telling my two best friends, and because we're in church, I won't tell you what they said to me. But one gestured, which we get on the road a lot if we're, you know, driving too slow, and the other used a few words. They basically said, that's great for you, see you later. See, they were really, you know, excited to hang out with me when I participated in certain activities. But now that I was going to follow Jesus, it was nonsense. The disciples, they hear nonsense. Remember, some of you, I don't know if you know the Peanuts. You hear the teacher, wah, 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 wah. That's what people hear, right? When we have had a moment with Jesus, when he has changed our lives, and we're so excited to share it, some people just hear, wah, 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 wah. It does not mean that we don't share it. What it does mean is we learn how to share it. We learn how to not just share it with zeal, but share it with wisdom. How to pull people along, how not to repel them. See, I didn't know that when I shared that with my two best friends. I was just so full of zeal. See, these women had a living, life-changing testimony, which was what the disciples yet had to experience. Thank God they did experience that. Now, I want to spend the rest of our time in this sermon answering this question. What characteristics identify a person who has a living, life-changing testimony? And I just want to suggest two. I'm sure there could be more, but the two that I'm suggesting simply come from the accounts in the Gospels of the resurrection experience. There's two actions that I see everyone do, whether it's the women, whether it's the disciples, whether it's the centurion at the cross. There's two actions, worship and witnessing. Okay, even the centurion said, this was the Son of God. And that was a moment of worship, of stark realization. Jesus was not just a man. Those who experienced the resurrected Christ, you see, worshiped. They fell down at his feet, and then they told others, they witnessed. So from these two actions, I think, come two characteristics of those with a living, life-changing testimony. Those two characteristics are humility and a sense of urgency. Let me start with humility. Every person who encountered the living Christ worshiped him. The women clasped his feet. They fell down before him. They just wanted to hold on to him. They had him back, but not just the man that they loved, that good teacher. Now they realized who he truly was, and they fell at his feet. Mary Magdalene, in the garden by herself, thinking his body had been taken somewhere, experiences Christ, and she cries out, Rabboni, my teacher. When the disciples saw him, it says they were overjoyed and worshiped him. When Thomas met him, he said, my Lord and my God. Worship, humility. You see, when Jesus changes our lives, one thing is certainly true. When we see him for who he is, we see ourselves for who we are, and that is humbling. We learn maybe how dark our hearts were, which we never knew before. We never knew the extent of our pride or our selfishness or our lack of love or our dishonesty or any number of things we could fill in the blank with. To meet the resurrected Christ is to come face to face with ourselves and our need for him, and it is humbling. He must become greater, I must become less. Those are the words of John the Baptist. That is the experience when we have a living, life-changing testimony. Life becomes less about us and more about him. And I think that is a lifelong experience because selfishness, self-absorption, pride does not just simply vanish. It's like squeezing the toothpaste tube. You get a little more out all the time. And even when you think it's all gone, if you roll it up, right? You got kids. You roll it up and you get a little more out, that's like pride. Those with a living, life-changing testimony continue to discover where pride has pockets still left in their life. As I was thinking about this characteristic of those with a life-changing testimony, I thought of a man in the first church I pastored. His name was Dan. Dan was just an interesting guy. When Dan walked through the doors of the church, everybody noticed. So you have to picture, this is a small church that's excited about their growth. We've got about 70 people packing into this small little building. They used to be like 30 people, so there's this sense of excitement and growth. And all of a sudden comes Dan with a beard down to about here, a Harley jacket on. He was saved during the Jesus movement. He was a self-proclaimed hippie. And he walks into this very kind of middle-class white congregation, and everybody looks right at Dan. Dan was one of the most humble guys I've ever met. He had a disease called Fabry's, which meant that none of his sweat glands worked. So you can imagine what summer was like for him. He just could not get his body cool. And this wreaked havoc with his body. One side of his body was paralyzed. He said, "I want to clean the church every week." I said, "Okay, great." So every week in would come Dan, paralyzed on one side. Just picture him vacuuming, scrubbing toilets, one-armed. That was Dan, just a humble follower of Jesus. When he was done cleaning the church, I'd hear a little knock on my door. He'd say, "Pastor, do you have a few minutes?" He'd sit down, he'd say, "Tell me what's going on in your life." And then we'd take time in prayer. That's someone with a living, life-changing testimony. Humble, serving, focused, outside of himself. The second characteristic is urgency. Those who have a life-changing testimony are people of urgency. Every person who encountered the resurrected Christ witnessed to others. The women told the apostles everything. Keep in mind, they weren't responsible for the reaction, right? They just shared their testimony and had it. The two men on the road to Emmaus told the disciples how Jesus met them, and when he talked, their hearts were on fire. 10 of the disciples tried to convince Thomas, "We've seen the Lord." Urgency. "Thomas, you must believe." Well, a week later, he did. And every single disciple gave their lives to share Christ with others. Urgency. Christians are inwardly compelled by the Holy Spirit to speak about Jesus. See, when we have this living, life-changing testimony, what burns in our hearts is, "I must tell someone about it." You know, these two thoughts caused me to reflect on my life. I must serve and I must share. See, that's a life-changing testimony with Jesus. That's where it drives us to. I must serve and I must share. And as I thought about this characteristic of urgency, I thought of a little old lady named Dot. Dot was in a nursing home in her 80s. And as I talked with her family members, one of her sons told me, "You know, there are 75 people in our family who know Jesus because of my mom." This quiet little unassuming 102-pound woman commanded such influence on her family that 75 people knew Jesus Christ because of her. Have you ever heard of Dot? There is a rich welcome for people like Dot, quietly going about their life, excited about Jesus, not afraid to share it. Those who have a living, life-changing testimony are marked by humility and urgency. I wonder, I ask the question to myself for you to consider, how high would I rate myself on a scale of 1 to 10 on my humility And then on a scale of 1 to 10, how high would I rate myself on a sense of urgency? And then the question would be, what would it take just to nudge it up a little bit closer to a 10? Because I know we're not 10s, right? If we were 10s, I think the sanctification process would be complete. Okay, so we're in process. So there's no shame in knowing you're not a 10. Let's just give everyone a break now. None of us are 10s, okay? And none of us are zeros. We're somewhere in between. Don't be afraid to be honest with your number, because then you know what to pray for. Nudge me up, Lord, one more number this week. Sharing the good news is what we're born for. And you know what I mean if you're a Christian. What you have been born again for. What you have received spiritual life from the resurrected Christ for. We are born to share. We are born to serve. We can hear the testimony about the resurrected Christ, and we can do one better. We can have a testimony about the resurrected Christ. And therein lies all the difference.